Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 28th of
somewhat
December.
Tentative.
Yes.
Sure about that.
Good morning and welcome. It's very nice to have you aboard. Let me introduce our panel to you, then we will tell you how you can get in on the conversation, and then we'll actually get in on the conversation. All of that coming up.
And then it'll be over.
That's right. And then it will be over. Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan. Did you have a lovely holiday? Excellent.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah,
we certainly
nice.
Appreciate your candor there.
Put us in a good mood. Gee, it's odd because I think all of you, all of us, thought of you at home just being happy.
Yeah.
And joyful.
Oh, sure.
Oh.
It's so against type.
Alan the Grinch Chartok.
No.
Oh. And by the way, I just saw two snowflakes outside.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was snowing on my way in, which is weird because on Christmas, I was in a Hawaiian shirt sitting outside grilling.
Exactly.
Did you grill on Christmas? Good for you. We thought about it. We did not do that.
It was very strange.
It was the most bizarre
holiday weather. Yes, very strange.
It was just bizarre.
Ray Graff is here. Good morning, sir. How
Hi.
Are you? Our WAMC newsman extraordinaire. We
Thanks.
Appreciate you being here.
Oh, gosh. Nice to be here.
Thank
happy,
you very much.
Happy holidays to you.
And my present to you.
It's
An
being here.
To be here, yes.
Thanks.
And Libby Post is with us, as she is each and every Monday.
Good morning.
And we thank you very much for
You're welcome.
For being with us. All right. Let's get to it. Roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC.org/roundtable to check in. And to give us a piece of your mind, and we would love to hear and find out what is going on in your world and when it comes to the stories that we talk about. Anybody have a request of where you'd like to start this morning?
Well, I saw an article, which I sent to all of you in the...
Yes, you sent it to the entire staff.
I said,
time did you send that?
But
I did not
see
that.
About 5 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. I was in here. That's why I didn't see it.
From
okay.
the Berkshire Eagle... Uh-huh. Which basically says, and I don't have it in front of me, that a massive study has now shown that the 81 milligram aspirin, which has good and bad sides to it, I've always taken one, can prevent, of all things, cancer. We knew about heart disease, stroke, and that kind of thing. It also says at the end of the article, like they always do, you know, aspirin can cause internal bleeding, and you have to sort of make up your own mind as to what you want to do in this. I know one doctor who takes full aspirins every day because he's so committed to the idea
yeah.
that, you know, that it has such beneficial effects. And that may be the most important thing everybody hears today, so I thought I'd mention it. Even more important than ISIS getting its behind kicked.
So 81 milligrams, which we'll get to, by the way, 81 milligrams is
tiny little
like a baby aspirin.
That's what they call it, baby
yeah,
aspirin.
Baby aspirin.
St. Joseph's
and
what is the
aspirin.
Recommended regular dose of aspirin? I never actually looked at the 300 milligrams or something?
Something like that. Up there in the 300s, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what it is. And, of course, you should probably get them coated. So that
why?
Well, because then when they go down
no
into the
stomach
gut,
upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
The coated ones are much better because aspirin can do a number on your stomach.
Yeah. So you know, it goes through. And one of the things that you really want to protect is your colon, of all things.
Right.
So there's that.
And your semicolon.
That's right.
Yeah. Aspirin works by inhibiting two enzymes, COX-1 and COX-2.
Mm-hmm.
It's aspirin's effect on
Nixon's
COX-2.
Son-in-law.
That comes into play with cancer prevention. COX-2 triggers the production of chemicals that cause fever, trigger inflammation in joints and other tissues, and aggravate pain. By inhibiting COX-2, aspirin fights inflammation, pain, and fever. And those same enzymes that provoke pain may have a role in promoting the growth
may
of
may have a role. Now, are we jumping the gun saying it's preventing cancer, Dr. Shartok?
Well, there was a massive study, as I say. And the older you got, the more beneficial this was. You do tend to see these things in the paper virtually every day.
Right.
And then you never hear about them again.
Yeah, this is a, well, this is a Q&A from a doctor, a patient to a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, we're all patients, none of us are doctors here, just to be clear about that.
An analysis of 8 high-quality randomized trials looked at whether taking a daily aspirin could reduce the risk of dying from cancer. The trials covered 25,000 people who had taken aspirin every day for at least 4 years. In these studies, subjects, daily aspirin reduced the risk of dying from cancer by 21%.
Huh.
Wow.
Pretty good. I'll take that.
It's good, right?
I'll take those odds.
And, of course, the taller you are, the more that they were. No, I just made that
the
up.
The taller you are?
I made that up.
Okay.
Okay, forget it. See, in other words, the 21%, that's just a percentage.
Okay.
Don't you see?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. You don't see?
I don't see. No, I don't want to see.
I'm not surprised.
All right.
When was the last time you were at a doctor? That's the
reason. I had my I'm in fine fettle. I had a checkup not too long ago. Terrific. Terrific.
Okay.
Why? Well, you seem skeptical.
What's not too long ago in your book?
No. Couple of months.
Oh, good. Okay, oh, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Oh, great. Because sure. Many times men your age do not like to go to the doctor.
Oh, doctors are fun and expensive.
Okay. You know, turning your head and cough isn't always the most fun thing to do.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe it is.
Meanwhile, in other news.
Can I leave now? Because
I couldn't help it. I'm so sorry.
Islamic State militants fled the government headquarters in the western city of Ramadi, although pockets of resistance remained in the north and east. Iraqi forces retaking center of key city from ISIS. This is the news making the headlines this morning that Alan referred to a few moments ago. And as soon as I convince the New York Times that I have paid for my subscription, I will be able to tell you exactly.
That does happen.
Yeah, what's going on with those guys?
I got it. Iraqi forces said on Monday they had seized a strategic government complex in the western city of Ramadi from the Islamic State after a fierce week-long battle, putting them on the verge of a crucial victory following a brutal seven-month occupation of the city by the extremist group. The loss of Ramadi, the capital and most populous city of western Iraqi province of Anbar, would be the most significant in a string of recent defeats for the Islamic State, which has occupied a large stretch of Iraq and Syria since the middle of last year.
I think that this is relatively good news, especially for at least for Iraq, and especially in light of Afghanistan, which isn't doing so well fighting the Taliban. That was the other story this morning.
And let me just, and we'll get to that as well. Okay. So just a quick pause, because as you say, relatively good news, because when we were talking about when this happened and the city was overtaken, we talked about it on this program as being a very, very bad thing.
Right. And so, you know, this kind of organized ground troops of the country that's trying to regain itself, which is in Iraq, coupled with the airstrikes from the United States and our allies, seem to be somewhat effective here. You look at that compared to what's going on in Afghanistan, where those troops they're homegrown folks, not the Taliban, but the police and the military there are not seeming to take their training very seriously or haven't been trained well or whatever it is. I mean, we see now as ISIS is getting kicked a bit in Iraq, the Taliban is rising in Afghanistan. And I know at various times we've said that they're one and the same, but clearly, you know, that I don't think that that's the case. But we need to look at both of these countries and, you know, but this is a good first step. Because, look, ISIS is a scourge on the earth, and the kind of fundamentalist, blind adherence to what they consider to be Islam, which we all know is not. You know, I watched the video of this woman being stomped and stoned to death because people thought she might have burned a Quran and she was an American sympathizer, and that wasn't the case. And it was just, you know, this blind allegiance to political religion, which is the most dangerous thing we can have.
Well, here's the other part of this. Geopolitics in this world have been pretty well divided up for a long time. So we know what Putin's doing. Mm-hmm. We know what the Chinese are doing. We know what we're doing. And there's standoff in some cases and not standoff there. And into this comes this uninvited player, you know, ISIS. And in the beginning, you know, noblesse oblige, we're not gonna dirty our hands with this. Mm-hmm. And then when people started to get their heads cut off, and when there were these terrible things and taking over major cities, And when you see that, all of a sudden, I think the heads got together. The existing order got together and said, we will not allow this. We will not allow. Did you say something? I'm sorry.
The existing heads that were still, had not been beheaded.
Yeah. Why is Ray shaking his hand in a bemused way? Once people said, this is not allowable, we can't have this. And they put their stuff together, and all of a sudden, ISIS is on the run. That's good. Although, I don't know that the existing geopolitical order is, perfect.
Is there any order left?
Oh, there's order in that there are agreements, secret agreements, technical agreements, and otherwise, this is your territory, this is not my territory, you Russians can come in and take over Ukraine, but you can't... But you can't take over one step more because we'll go get you. The Chinese will say, these islands which we've created...
Oh, I thought you were just talking about the Middle East, Syria and Iraq.
I'm talking about the worldwide geopolitical order.
Right. And what's thrown the wrench in the works here is that ISIS doesn't act like a quote-unquote nation state. And so, what I learned in international relations, it doesn't act that way. It doesn't sit down at a table. There are titular heads, but nothing that's recognized by the rest of the world. And so we have no choice but to respond in the way that we've been responding, yet with the ultimate goal of keeping that geopolitical perspective or order in place, so that we all have our piece of the pie, which is really all it's ever about.
Yeah.
All right. Let's. I also do want to talk about the Taliban gains as well. A year of Taliban gains show that we haven't delivered, top Afghan officials say. And as the Afghan convoy entered the battered village, Taliban fighters opened fire. U.S.-trained Afghan policemen poured out of their Humvees and began wildly shooting their AK-47 rifles in every direction. The enemy is firing one bullet, and you are responding with dozens, their commander screamed into his radio into frustration. Aim, then fire. A minute later, the militants melted away. On this day in early December in the southern province of Helmand, they had delivered their message. The Taliban is back, its fighters showing a battle discipline and initiative far superior to the Afghan security forces trained and equipped by the United States.
Mm. Very frustrating, isn't it?
Well, this is one of those one step forward, two steps back, right?
Sure. Well, it's interesting because Boko Haram seems to be on the fleeing. They're, mm-hmm. they're done, or it seems to be. They're really in trouble. ISIS seems to be in trouble. But, of course, if you step on one side of the balloon, another side may go up. And we do know that not everything was perfect between al-Qaeda, for example, and ISIS. And there was a fight for territory there.
Their geopolitical stuff.
That's right. That's right. So you're stepping on one side of the balloon. We invest incredible amounts of money, so-called training people. There was a very interesting piece, I think, on the BBC this morning, Joe, where there was they had brought a sheik, maybe it was the NPR, they had brought a sheik into into talk to the colonels, the American colonels, and the sheik said, "How long do you think you'll be here after you go into Iraq?" This was pre-Iraq, and he said, "Well, we think we'll be out in a year." He said, "Well, I think we'll be out in a year." And the sheik shook his head and said, "Listen, they killed my mother, they killed my father, they killed my brother. I don't like them. I'm telling you now, you will be here as long as you were in Germany." And that turned out to be right.
We have about 2 minutes before we go over to a break, so let's go to some letters.
Most of which are about aspirin.
Aha!
It's to answer your question. I checked three different brands, 325 milligrams of aspirin,
the
big
dose.
One, right. Robert said, aspirin will also be known to be a vascular dilator, which, besides saving stroke and heart attack victims, generally promotes better blood flow. That inhibits the growth of tumors and plaque. Aspirin is a miracle drug, and I've been taking two adult aspirins a day for over 20 years without any side effects. My advice, take as much as you can. My advice is talk to your doctor. William says from Little Falls, I had major abdominal surgery and have been forbidden to use aspirin.
That's true.
And, yeah. And Michael says, my president's plan to defeat ISIL is working with the taking of Ramadi, much to the chagrin of the Republican presidential candidates.
Right, that's they'll all probably say that we're losing.
What did you say?
They'll all probably point to the Taliban and say, see, they're one and the same, and we're losing in Afghanistan. I mean, they'll find some way.
No, I think he makes a very good point. I think he makes a very good point that it, you know, the old days, it all stopped at, foreign policy stopped at the shores. You know, everybody was together. This has become disgraceful.
Yeah, it has, and they're going to use, they're going to try to turn this around. They're
when did it become disgraceful?
To their advantage.
Well, no, it's been disgraceful for quite a while now.
Yeah. Once they started questioning the president's role in foreign policy, that's when it becomes disgraceful.
But it was okay to do that when Bush was in office, right? Because a lot of people on these airwaves did that.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that was fine.
But not in Congress. I mean, that's the difference here.
You were not?
Is
I was not a member of, the,
right.
of either party in
should've
the government.
Right. You should have been.
You should have been?
Yeah. Once the commander-in-chief makes a decision, it usually what happens is that everybody lines up and supports that decision until it's politically untenable,
even
like
Charlie
Vietnam.
Even Charlie Lindbergh had a small problem
after
being pro-Nazi for years.
That's right.
Stephen writes, studies show that 100% of subjects die from something.
Ah, good point.
Yes,
but when is the question?
Right.
And then we heard from George, who said, by the way, I do not agree with or support anyway the Donald or his statements. I am repulsed by them. But I think that understanding his popularity is important to understand in order to effectively oppose him. And what's the thing? It's all about political correctness. I guess I've never talked about how political correctness is what the Donald is all about. Not more than once a day. Thank you, George. Okay. Then, happy holidays, Roundtable. You got to put in a light for Libby.
This is our
Tom.
Director.
Tom. Yeah, you're not
all
properly
right.
lit.
I'm sorry.
He's got a good point.
All right, so we have we'll have a couple minutes to work on the lighting. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We're going to hear some news, and we'll return to our conversation. And we'll, of course, welcome your comments. RoundtableWAMC.org. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 28th of December. Very nice to have you with us. Beleaguered Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel has called for reform after a police officer arriving at the scene of a domestic disturbance fatally shot two people on Saturday, including a 55-year-old mother of five who authorities say was accidentally struck and tragically killed. In a statement offering scant detail, Chicago police say they were confronted by a combative subject that resulted in the discharging of the officer's weapon. This all comes, of course, as Rahm Emanuel is, fighting for his job as he has been. Even before this particular occurrence, there were major protests over the holiday weekend calling for him to resign. Christmas Eve, a rally took place on North Michigan Avenue in the shopping district chanting Rahm's got to go in 2016. And for what it's worth, GQ just named Rahm Emanuel to its list of the worst people of 2015. And so all of that is going on in Chicago. And I know we've discussed this before, but it does seem politically that it is going to be hard to get over this.
Well, here's the first thing is he's got 3 years to go. And as we all know, 3 years is a lifetime in politics. 1 year is a lifetime in politics. Things can change. So I'm sure his view is if I can ride this out, it'll be okay. The second thing is the sort of pincer movement that he finds himself between, you know, the very vocal, correctly concerned Black Lives Matter thought, and the police, you know, were expected to keep the peace. And who have families, and there is always that thin blue line, which we all know about, in which self-protection and my buddies are, you know, are more important than anything else here, and we have to do that. So if he goes one way or the other, it could be a disaster for him. I suspect, unlike a lot of other people, he's going to make it. I think he's going to make it. I think, you know, there's a good possibility he's just going to stall it out. I don't see, there's a guy in the state legislature wants to pass what is clearly an ex post facto bill, saying we should be allowed to impeach him. Well, that's, you know, that's just something you do in order to get a few votes or whatever. But, you know, that would clearly be unconstitutional.
Would it be, though? I'm wondering about that. No, so
really?
Well, in other words, if they enact a law and he had already been elected, then yeah. You're saying that he would not be.
How could you be?
The recallable.
Constitution is very clear about ex post facto. Can't do that. Now, I think you could probably do it.
For the next guy.
Or they may make the argument where you can do it from this time forward, but I think that that's not that violative of the election process.
But at what point does the political pressure on him become, he's a stubborn fellow, as we know from way back,
yep.
But at what point does the political pressure become so much that he says, well, for the good of everybody, I got to get out of here.
Well, let's put it this way. I wouldn't want to be him.
When the streets are lit up every single night.
Well, it's easier when you're in Cuba.
Yeah, this is true.
So
where he went for the holidays?
He's he kind of weathered the storm from Cuba. So, but the other issue, of course, is that and Ray mentioned this as he has gone and done his acts of contrition, but they don't seem to be playing very well.
Well, what would you expect? I mean, if he goes and says, "I'm sorry, this we blew it. I fired the police chief. I changed all of this around." What would you expect is going to happen? People are going to say, "Oh, well, then you're a good mayor." No, it's always seen as a sign of weakness when you give in at all. So he did that, but I don't see them. You know, I don't see this. I don't see the group that wants him gone turning around and saying, "Okay, now you can stay because we think you've done right here."
No, there has to be a cultural shift in the police department. And I know that the Federal Justice Department is looking into how they do their business. But what happened this weekend is unacceptable and didn't need to happen. You know, it's shoot first, ask questions later is exactly what's going on there. And they have to stop. They have to stop doing that. They could have tased this kid, as one of the neighbors said. You know, they could have tased him. There's no reason for an innocent bystander to be shot and killed. You know, they are just, you know, they are, in a sense, they are really much out of control and think that they run the city with their guns. And it can't, that's not effective policing.
Okay, Libby, just for the sake of argument.
Okay, fine.
If there are, just for the sake of argument, let's say there are 29,000 cops in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One guy does something stupid. Does that mean everybody else is guilty of doing that? Most people do the right thing.
Yeah, but
yeah, go ahead.
Well, shouldn't there be some? If the department is already under fire
mm-hmm.
for being overzealous, and there have been calls for reform prior to Saturday's incident, and the mayor and the police department are under great stress to the point where they fired the police chief. So isn't there a little more?
They should be a little
caution,
right,
when you go into a situation as to not to make sure you're doing things perhaps by the book or not screwing it up.
Well, nicely said. Again, for the sake of discussion. You know, an extra couple of seconds in the eyes of many of these. First of all, I want to say that, look, there are some very bad police officers around, just like there are some very bad human beings around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many communities, we know who these people are. It was once described to me in a place when I was doing a story about it. You know, this guy's record was as long as from your finger to your elbow, his folder. And again and again and again. But, you know, I think what you have to do is weed those people out and say, look, all cops, I came in here, it was a while ago, I admit it, it was not recently, but I came in here one day, I just read in the paper that the newest scam was saying somebody walks up to you and says, do you have a tire iron, because I have a flat. And you say, okay. And they say, will you bring it around the corner? And then they beat you up. I just read it in the paper. So right out in front of this building. So at the top of my voice, I yelled a bad word. And I said, get the out of here. Leave me alone. Now, that's what citizens want. They want to know that the potential for a police officer to get people who break the law and who would break your head off of the street. And that's the other side of this thing.
Did you have something? No, you're good?
I'm good. The issue for me here is that they had just gone through what they did with the kid that was shot 16 times.
Right, of course.
They know the world is watching. So doesn't it make sense to be a little more careful and more by the book?
Well, I mean, it's clear we were not there. So we do not know the dynamics of the
situation. This kid
had
a baseball bat, and that was it. The dynamics of the situation is the cop shot his gun when he didn't have to. All he had was an aluminum baseball bat, and the woman was an innocent bystander.
It's terrible. The whole thing's terrible.
I think that the only danger here when we discuss things like this,
yes,
is that we make it too much a cut and dried black and white situation. When you go into a situation like that, I mean, have you ever been struck by an aluminum baseball bat? Not defending anybody's actions here, but you go in and you don't know what to expect. And I think decisions are made sometimes that are bad ones.
By the way, Ray, Thomas agrees with you, who says, how does anyone really know about what happened this weekend?
We don't yet.
We have to trust the media.
That'll work out.
But let us not forget that this is just the latest. As I mentioned in the article, the calls for Rahm Emanuel's departure, early departure, were coming on Christmas Eve, well before this incident.
And the political question is, if in order to save himself, if he has to throw the entire police force under the bus, how is that going to play out for him? In other words, this is a no-win.
Exactly.
This is a no-win for him. So at what point, Alan, does he say, I'm out, I got to go?
Actually, Ray, I made that very point about, 6 or 7 minutes ago, because there's, when I described it as a sort of pincer movement, he's between this rock and a hard place in terms of having.
Okay, but you said he can make it, and I wonder if he can.
Well, no, now it comes down to what we call character. Who is this guy, Emanuel? Is he a gutsy guy? Yeah. Is he somebody who has been known for standing up and looking people in the eye and saying, you don't push me around? He worked for presidents under the worst conditions. He was a congressman. I just don't think he wants to go. And I think if he doesn't want to go, and he knows this is the end politically, if he's out, that he won't go.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get a few letters, and then we'll also take on some other topics as well. We invite you to join us, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Bread and Butter, newly opened restaurant in North Amherst's Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly, breadandbutteramherst.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, maintaining 32 miles of trails throughout the Lake George region for snowshoeing, skiing, and winter exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.com. Springbrook, Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, wishing WAMC listeners a safe and happy holiday season. SpringbrookNY.org. And from Unusual Wedding Rings and More in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, a jewelry emporium providing traditional and non-traditional engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for conventional and same-sex couples. UnusualWeddingRings.com.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Pomalov Hour.
Nice.
Get your hands out of that soap, Joe.
Very nice to be with you. It is.
I like it.
Well, no, it sounds great. It's Monday morning. It's Monday morning, and we welcome your comments roundtable at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And we'll go to a few letters, and then we'll get to some other issues in the news.
Okay. Ann says, the volume of incidents occurring around the country indicate a broken culture, not isolated misjudgment. It is a judgment call, but culture shapes expectations and actions, and police seem poorly trained in de-escalation strategies. Could be. Tom says, what does Tom say? Tom says, it doesn't matter what the cops have done in the past. They don't care and will continue to, quote, fear for their lives. And that's what I get.
A lot of cops care. I think that's a vast overstatement. A lot of cops care.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have a wonderful cadre of people who drop in at WMC from time to time. We talk to, I see them over to the Ichiban, you know, and talk to them. They're bright, good people. I think it just takes one bad teacher, for example, to create hell for everybody else. A couple of bad priests, and so every single priest is blottered by that whole thing. It's a bad word, but you know, you just can't extrapolate that everybody in a profession where you have all of those people will do something like that.
We want to take a...
Oh, Bonnie. Want to hear from Bonnie?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Funny how she was accused by being sent by the Americans, but the guy selling Viagra wasn't. Do we have any idea what that's about?
Nope.
Eh?
Are you listening to the station, Bonnie?
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's what.
This is the Palmolive Hour, and
and Viagra wasn't around.
Yeah.
So we'll get a Lucky Strike commercial in a moment.
will you be their spokesman, right?
Yes, I will. Duke Snyder and me. Hi, kids.
Do you remember the boxes?
Huh?
The dancing boxes.
Oh,
Lucky
yeah.
Strike.
Sure.
With the legs coming out. Do you remember that?
No. I've seen pictures of it.
All right. A couple two issues I want to get to before we wrap it up for this morning. First
what?
Of all, this what?
Wrap it up already?
So much fun.
We just got here.
Yeah, we have about 10 minutes left. After spending 444 days in captivity and more than 30 years seeking restitution, the Americans taken hostage at the United States Embassy in Tehran in 1979 have finally won compensation. Buried in the huge spending bill signed into law Friday are provisions that would give each of the 53 hostages or their estates up to $4.4 million. It's based on the day, I believe, right? It's based on
how many days?
How many days? Victims of other state-sponsored terrorist attacks, such as the 1998 American embassy bombings in East Africa, would also be eligible for benefits under the law.
How about we ask the Iranians? Their sanctions are going to be ending very soon. How about you pony up that money? You want to play ball?
It's been 36 years, 1 month, 14 days, it's been a long time. So it is, but it is, it's also a lot of money.
I'm shocked that it's taken this long.
Isn't that?
I find
that
it
is shocking.
Pretty disgusting that these people were held in captivity against their will by an enemy combatant for over a year. And we're just getting around to compensating them for that? I don't get it.
Many of whom are dead.
Yeah.
The very agreement that won the hostages' release in 1981 barred them from seeking restitution. Their legal claims were repeatedly blocked in courts, including an appeal denied by the Supreme Court. Congress tried but failed to pass laws granting them relief.
Mm-hmm.
So what changed this time?
Hold on. I'll get to that. But this year, vindication came in a decision that forced the Paris-based bank BNP to pay a $9 billion penalty for violating sanctions against Iran, Sudan, and Cuba. Some of that money was suddenly available for victims of state-sponsored terrorism. Congress was also motivated by many members' anger over the Iran nuclear accord.
Hmm.
Well, you know, a lot of soldiers have been killed in the service of their country. And I don't think they get $4 million. There may be something, but $4 million is a lot of money. And for a death, which affects that family and people that loved ones and the rest. So somebody's going to write and say, although I'm not sure what I believe, I think probably it's okay with me that they got the money. But somebody's going to write and say, you know, when they went over there, they knew something could happen. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you ever...
I don't think anybody ever considers that. I think when they go over there, yeah, they knew something could happen, but they also thought that the embassy would be protected. You know,
right.
You go over there with that assumption that
right.
You're going to serve your country and that your embassy will be protected.
I hear you, Libby.
There were 53 hostages. One left early, was released early because of illness. 52 hostages were released on January 20th, 1981. And each you get the way they figured it out, $10,000 per day of captivity for each of the 53 hostages, 37 of whom are still alive.
Okay.
All right.
I think we've covered that quite nicely.
All right. So you are calling for a dismissal and a move on?
No.
Okay.
Iran should pay. Iran should pay the reparations.
Ray said that, and, you know, I heard him say it.
All right. Do you want to go over the first of all? What do you make of the Peyton Manning story, right?
It's an interesting story. Al Jazeera broke this news, alleged news, and
yeah. And now they seem to be recanting.
Some
right.
people
well,
are.
The
I was only an intern.
The guy who they based the story on has gone on and said I was lying. Basically.
I was an intern.
Right.
I believe is
and
what he
I,
said.
And I don't believe anything that I was quoted as saying. It was very strange.
I wouldn't believe anything our intern said, I'll tell you that.
Well, I would. I think there's nothing
oh,
like
sorry.
Our interns. They're quite wonderful.
No, they're wonderful.
And I love them, and I hope we'll get lots more of them.
Smart
Raymond.
Kids.
Yes.
No,
but
I don't think the fact that he was an intern is the issue here. The fact is that he lied, and he admitted
no,
lying.
No, he says he lied now.
He says he lied, and he admitted lying. Right.
Right. Could, how, well, but could he be lying about lying?
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
You know,
so think
15
green.
Minutes of fame.
So I think we take this. This story comes because we not only are talking about one of the great dynasties of
yeah.
football, but also that this guy seems to be a very good, clean player.
Peyton
with
Manning,
a sterling record. And even those of us who have teams who go against this gentleman have great respect
okay.
and admiration for his playing. Yes.
But you can't – that can't be his defense. In other words, this would seem to be a very sketchy accusation.
No.
However,
everybody
who's ever accused of this is like, I play it the right way.
I'm not
I do
saying that's
right.
his defense. I'm saying that the reason that it is the story it is and it's a surprise is because – of who this guy is.
Mm. Mm.
You don't agree?
No, I agree.
Okay.
Who, now, I know that since I know nothing about any of this.
Yes.
But who was it that endorsed Trump? Which of those guys?
The Tom Brady. But Tom I don't
Brady,
know,
yeah.
but it's questionable as to whether it was actually an endorsement.
Yeah,
he said he didn't
footballs
want
footballs and such. It's he's fine.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
Want to talk about CoinGate?
I don't even know. What is that? Will that kill 2 minutes?
Yeah, that'll kill 2 minutes.
All right,
what's CoinGate?
So last night, the New York Jets and the New York Jets and the New England Patriots are tied at the end of the game, and so they go for the coin toss, and the Patriots win the coin toss. Okay. They win the coin toss.
And they choose.
And they choose.
To kick.
And give the ball to the other team.
Right.
Okay?
Stupid.
Well, and then there seems to be some confusion on the part of the man, Slater, who the player who is making the call. He seems confused. He's looking back. He's asking, well, no, what? And then when they ask Coach Belichick, the ever-wordy Coach Belichick,
just coach.
Says,
coach.
Oh, well, no, we meant to do that.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
that was our strategy. We meant to do that.
So case closed. No
right.
problem.
Well, you know, I was taking a nap, and I got up, and I turned on the football game. I wrote this on Facebook yesterday, and I was like, am I dreaming? Because
well, it just seemed odd.
One point needs clarification for those of us who don't know anything about this. The Jets won.
Yes, they do.
Correct.
Well, that's the point. So because they got the what?
No, go ahead.
No, I thought you were going to explain.
Well, no, I was going to explain. It's very common for Belichick and some coaches to, if they win the toss at the beginning of the game, to defer possession of the ball into the second half. But it's very rarely done in overtime because the odds say if you get the ball first in overtime, you have a much better chance of winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Well, one guy said, one of the players said, whatever coach says, we believe
that's Tom Brady. Yeah, whatever coach says.
Coach says. It's so, a second name. Doctor, we'll see you now, whatever coach says.
Right.
As if there's only one.
Although, okay, and I'll go with that argument, except for everyone in that group seemed to be genuinely shocked and looking around like, is it right? Did everybody really say that? Yeah. Mm. Would you agree with that, Ray?
I would agree with you.
Okay, yeah. It just seemed odd, didn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing seemed odd.
Yeah, okay. Very odd. But
mainly it was odd because the Jets won, which is very...
But it gave them
A playoff.
Bird,
maybe.
Right?
Yeah. Don't jump the gun there, Libby.
But of course, Giants are not too good.
Oh, look at the time.
Yeah. Not too good. We're talking about the Manning.
All right, we're out of time. You know, yeah,
break.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.